Hello, and welcome to Marching On, the podcast brought to you by the ACLU of Kansas. I'm Micah Kubik, Executive Director, and I thank you for listening. At the heart of our democracy is the idea of communities coming together to make their voices heard. And an incredible example of this is playing out right now in Leavenworth, Kansas. For years, the private, for-profit prison corporation CoreCivic operated a prison in the city of Leavenworth. That for-profit prison was notorious for serious human rights violations and unsafe conditions that harmed detainees and staff alike. The facility earned a global reputation for the dangers and problems that it posed, leading it to close at the end of 2021 when the federal government opted not to renew its contract. It has been, mercifully, inactive ever since. Over the last year, CoreCivic and the city of Leavenworth have grabbed headlines worldwide over a battle they've been having in the courts. CoreCivic wanted to reopen the facility as a detention center for ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. And it sought to do so without any regard at all for the city's laws, which required the company to get a permit before reopening. But the residents of Leavenworth have shown up in droves to make it known that they do not want this facility reopened and that they want CoreCivic held accountable. This has been the ultimate local grassroots movement with a diverse range of voices and perspectives. They've spoken up at city commission meetings, had rallies in front of the courthouse before hearings, and marched through their downtown banging on pots and pans to tell CoreCivic that its toxic brand of human rights abuse for profit is not welcome in Kansas. Their work to combat the inhumane for-profit prison model and to engage the community in Leavenworth grew rapidly over this last year. Today's episode features two members of one of the organizations leading that movement, Ashley Hernandez and Justin Young of the Carceral Accountability Council. Ashley and Justin are in conversation with our very own Esme Tsung and Jesse Kielman to tell us about the work happening in Leavenworth. Without further ado, here's that conversation.
Today we are joined by Justin and Ashley, who are both from the Carceral Accountability Council. For their website, the CAC was founded in 2025 to address injustices in the prison system, especially focusing on abuses by for-profit facilities like CoreCivic. Justin and Ashley, can I ask you each to just introduce yourself and share a little bit about your background and how you got involved in this work generally?
So again, my name is Justin Young. I got into CAC, I think, through Ashley. I knew about CAC wasn't a thing at the time, but the grassroots movement, because I live in Leavenworth. And so that's basically mixing those two things together. Ashley asked me to attend one of the meetings that they had. So I did that, listened. And at the time, I don't think I was necessarily sold on the full picture. I didn't really understand it because it was just one meeting. But after a while, I think just momentum picked up and went from there and dove into communications, and that's what I do now, the communications director for the CAC. And I think for the most part, that's been history. Other than that, my background, I work for Kansas City Academy, and I'm a mediator in my other career. So,
okay, awesome. So you're a Leavenworth community member. Is that your primary connection to,
yep,
to get involved?
Yep.
Very cool. Awesome. And what about you, Ashley?
Yeah, so I work for the Sisters of Charity of Leavenworth. I'm their organizing and policy coordinator for the Office of Justice, Peace, and Integrity of Creation. So that's kind of how I got involved originally with the work through Sisters of Charity.
Can you explain just a little bit about Sisters of Charity? I'd love to hear just a little bit about that for anyone who might not be familiar by name.
Oh yeah, so the Sisters of Charity of Leavenworth, that was a Catholic community of sisters that live up there. They founded a lot of the health systems that we see in Kansas and Minnesota and Colorado as well. They own the University of St. Mary's out in Leavenworth. And they do a lot of community work around Kansas City, whether it's housing, immigration, food security, homelessness. So the sisters are integrated a lot in the justice work. And for my role, it's basically making sure that their work continues beyond them. So integrating their hopes and their beliefs and their charism into the community.
Awesome. Thank you. And then I know I interrupted you. So do you have more about you want to say about your background or how you got then involved with the Leavenworth stuff more specifically?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a resident of Leavenworth. I moved here in a couple of days. It'll be 4 years exactly. And being a part of the Leavenworth community really got me motivated to also get involved with this. I'm originally from San Antonio, Texas. So immigration really has like a very strong place in my heart, especially, I mean, you've seen all the detention centers along the border, and then being a Latina myself, this is an issue that I hold very close because we're an impacted community.
Thank you both for sharing that. And my next question, I think, Justin, you teed me up pretty perfectly. You know, I want to hear more about how the CAC started, but you mentioned kind of being involved with the organization, and it's like, oh, CAC wasn't an organization, but there was organization work around Core Civic Leavenworth. So I thought to set the stage, we should hear a little bit more about that work and what was all happening with that facility and the history there. So to get everyone up to speed, I'm going to toss it to Esme Zem, who's joining us also, our communications director. Can you give us a little bit of a recap, what was happening with the facility, and then kind of maybe the beginnings of the organization work around it too?
So the Core Civic Leavenworth facility has been open in Leavenworth for 36 years, something like that. So the ACLU of Kansas really got more involved towards the end of the Core Civic contract with the U.S. Marshal. Up until 2021, it was run as a federal detention facility. And so, you know, at the time I was on the legal team, I was a legal assistant. I managed our intake process. And so I would get a lot of reports through our intake system, through our phones and emails about all of the issues that we were hearing out of the Core Civic Leavenworth facility. Towards, you know, sort of the end of 2020, early 2021, we saw a huge spike in those reports. We sort of had always had concerns about access to religious practice and medical care, security concerns. There was sort of always a steady drumbeat of issues with drugs and violence and homicides, some security concerns. And, you know, those were all named in a 2017 U.S. Inspector General report. That sort of said that, you know, unless Core Civic starts to correct these issues now, they will get worse. And we sort of saw that in 2021. So we started getting a ton of different reports from family, letters from people inside. And then we also started having conversations with the federal public defender's offices who were sort of saying that, you know, from what they could tell from their interactions with their clients, like they were experiencing the same thing and that it got much, much worse in the last year or so, to the extent that, you know, I think a federal judge has now been quoted sort of globally at this point, calling it a hellhole, right? It was really extreme. I think in the U.S., we have a high tolerance for violence and, you know, abhorrent conditions within our prisons. And I think it really says something that in the Core Civic Leavenworth facility in the year 2020, 2021, things were so bad that it even was extreme in that scale.
Within
that framework. The ACLU of Kansas and three other states and the federal public defender's offices sent a letter to the White House Domestic Policy Council, President Biden's counsel at the time, sort of detailing the reports that we got. That's on the website. And then, you know, as promised, President Biden discontinued the contract and did not renew it at the end of 2021. So starting in January of 2022, the facility has been completely empty. So that's sort of the background of that facility. As we started hearing in 2023, 2024, again, not under the Trump administration, under the Biden administration, that there was an interest in increasing ICE capacity. They put out what's called an RFP, Request for Proposal. Core Civic was one of the many companies that responded, discussing the Midwest Regional Facility as an option. And so that was sort of when we first started hearing that there was interest in reopening this facility. And until sort of the last, I would say, you know, 2024, 2025, it has been a lot of the ACLU of Kansas, Advocates for Immigrant Rights and Reconciliation, working to develop relationships in the local community that was pretty fired up about this facility reopening and, you know, some of the local memory around the conditions there and the impact on residents and people who work there, to the point that the local group is so active now that we have the Carceral Accountability Council. They formed their own 501c3. And that's sort of how we got to where we are now.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for that, Esme. Ashley, can you kind of take the baton from that? Can you talk a little bit from some of your perspective around some of that early organizing and as much as you were part of it, and then the formation, like why the CAC formed and kind of what that process looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. So aside from like all the coalition work that was going on between like ACLU, AIR, Sisters of Charity, and all the other organizations, there was like on the ground local work that was being discussed as well, which is why CAC formed. So it started off as just a few of us in a local coffee shop, the Starbucks at a Price Chopper, actually. So we would meet weekly and kind of talk about what was going on, how we can best like engage the community, what resources we had. And all this is at the local level. So we're not looking at, oh, who are the key players in Kansas that need to get involved? We're like, no, who are the Leavenworthians that need to have a voice and need to be uplifted? And how can we activate people who maybe know nothing about this facility? So using my position with the Sisters of Charity, we were able to kind of host a roundtable at the Sisters of Charity's mother house. And we brought in people from all over Leavenworth. We went door to door handing out invitations, inviting people to this roundtable. We sent it out through organizations that were partnering with us. And we got about, I would say, maybe, what, 40, 50 people there? So it was a
That's really impressive. Like, to anyone that doesn't understand organizing work, like, that's very good.
And I would just add, you know, I attended as well, and it was so well put together, right? I remember there were distinct tables of, like, different actions people could take. There was, like, you know, put together a letter writing campaign. There was phone banking. There was social media and comms, and set up a rally, organize a protest. Like, there were so many different ways for everyone there to sort of plug in the way that they felt comfortable, that, like, I actually brag about that event to other people. I'm like, you should copy this. Tell them about it.
Yeah. Well, I credit that to Mike Trapp. I think that was like a really great motivator for people to get involved the way that they felt comfortable getting involved. And actually out of that meeting came a number of things. So it's what we've developed, like our phone banking crew around. It's how we've developed our canvassing team. It's what developed the Pots and Pans March. So all this like building community sentiment, building that sense of community, but also including all the different voices and perspectives are what has really brought us together as the Carceral Accountability Council, because we know it's not just one perspective coming together. It's not just, I hate ICE, or I don't like carceral systems, or I don't want the future of Leavenworth to be prisons. It's everyone. So I think that's the most important thing about the CAC is we are inclusive. We are not one-sided on things. We don't come from one perspective. We represent all of Leavenworth. And because of that, we moved away from just Stop Core Civic, that campaign title, because it's not just about stopping Core Civic. It's about carceral accountability as a whole. So that's kind of how we got to where we are today.
That's really cool. I'm going to throw a bonus question at you, Justin, just because hearing about that like initial meeting and the 40 people joining, and primarily from the community of Leavenworth, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious, like, how it feels in Leavenworth of like maybe like what your awareness was as this was growing, like kind of before and as you got involved.
I have lived in Leavenworth for a while. I came here as a military brat. But the first thing that I noticed was, you know, living on Fort Leavenworth. Fort Leavenworth has the only military prison, the U.S. United States Disciplinary Barracks. Right outside of Fort, you have the Leavenworth Penitentiary. That building is beautiful. It's daunting. And then you had the women's facility. You had Lansing facility. There's several more small detention centers in general, the Justice Center and everything else. So for me, I was in that jaded area that Ashley talked about. People wanting to move away from the moniker that Leavenworth is a prison town. You run into a lot of people who are first, second, third generation guards, and they take a lot of pride in it. And so there's as much pride that we know how to do prisons, as weird as that sounds, as there's this sentiment that, yeah, we can do something different. So me not being originally from the area, I still have this outside perspective that, okay, this is a town that's centered around prisons, but then the country as a whole isn't centered around that. So getting involved with this, I guess, brought that outside perspective to say we can do something different. This fire is lit by a match that is not about prisons overall, but centered around Core Civic, which is a prison. And then it gives us an outside perspective or a different perspective to not just fight this fight, but to also envision a future after. And so that's, I think, kind of correlates to both what Esme was saying about the history of Core Civic, what Ashley mentioned as our primary, or what was our initial primary goal of Stop Core Civic. And then for us, as we formed this 501c3, blossomed into this idea of, okay, well, what comes after?
Yeah, and I think I would just sort of champion CAC always, right? As I think they've done a really good job ensuring that their messaging is really inclusive. The outreach that they do, I think, is really intentional about sort of naming that not everyone that is in Leavenworth does have the attitude that maybe the ACLU of Kansas does, right? But I think creating a space where there's sort of nuance for different perspectives and to maybe move people along that spectrum of, you know, understanding prisons and their role in our society. I think that space is like really important, and that engagement is really only if, like, what we've seen from, you know, communications research and, you know, attitudes research is that that local organizing is what really tends to move people and help them evolve in how they understand these systems. So props to CIC for that incredible work.
I really like that framing too, because I feel like so many of our discussions, especially once we get kind of to this meta level that seems so natural of like, oh, where on the political spectrum are you? And you got to win people from this contingency or that contingency. That treats people as like fixed, permanent, concrete people that also occupy a well-defined political spectrum, both of which are not true things. And I think there's something in that that I really resonated with of like, as you work with the issue, it's like, oh, I feel this way about it. And then like, once you learn more and work on it, like, oh no, this solution actually won't work the way I thought because now I've learned this about the system by working through it. So like, I think there's something just very organic and like living, breathing, growing about that kind of framework of it. So thank you. And I'm really, thank you also, Justin. I'm very glad I threw a surprise question at you. So on the CIC website, there are four main positions listed. I kind of thought it would just be a good way to get a sense of the organization. And like clearly, like these are the things that you guys have accentuated as the things you want to tackle. So I thought that just would be a really cool framework to learn more about the organization and the goals and the thought processes there. So I'm going to throw the first one at you, Justin. The first position starts, Core Civic's profit-driven track record demonstrates a disregard for safety and oversight, rendering it untrustworthy to manage the Leavenworth facility. And then the full statement mentions safety concerns in Core Civic facilities nationwide, because it's a nationwide organization. So I'm going to throw just kind of that first one at you and just ask, can you share a little bit more about that position and why it's a major focus for the CIC?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a common sense position for us. Anytime you have an organization that is profit-driven, we're thinking of the idea that the interest is the bottom line, that they want to stay in the black. Well, Core Civic is a publicly traded company. I think everybody in this room either probably has a 401k, we invest in something. And so if you think about it, what is our primary goal at the end of the month, quarter, year? It's to see that our stock is doing well, okay? Well, how do you get there? You have a business that has to drive that. And so our stance is, if Core Civic has that position, they're going to do whatever they have to do to cut costs. And we have seen that in different records as far back as the 2017 report on the audit that showed triple bunking. Ashley can go even deeper into that, which I imagine she will, because it's important. Mm-hmm. But that's how you get to being in the black. That's how you get to show your shareholders, yeah, our operating budget is, you know, 100%. You're making money because we're making money. But how do you make money off of people? In this case, it's viewed as something has to give. And Core Civic is being centered around detaining people. The carceral system in general, we looked at the history before, started out almost as farming out individuals for work. I think as far back as we look, post-Civil War. And that was profit-driven. I mentioned the United States Disciplinary Barracks. When I first moved to Fort Leavenworth, one of the things that you could do, they had a store on Fort. You could buy those barrel grills and stuff like that. You can buy picnic tables. You can, I mean, there's, it's, if you go there, the craftsmanship is great. You would say, who's making this stuff? And then you find out that it is those who are being held at that prison. And so this is an ongoing thing, but as it applies to Core Civic, if it's ongoing in our carceral system, if that's what we accept, then you better believe that it's going to be happening with a publicly traded company. And so our stance is saying, just on the basic idea, how do you make money off of people?
I am continually amazed by our criminal legal system and our prison systems. A prison labor Cracker Barrel is maybe the newest addition to that. Ashley, I'll keep it with this first one. If you have anything to add, I know specifically triple bunking and maybe some of the other profit-driven practices.
Yeah, I can add to that a little bit. So with the triple bunking, I mean, it's basic math. Like the more beds they fill, the more people they have.
And double standard, right?
Yeah. So the more beds they have, the more money are filled, the more money they make. And then also with the understaffing, so like the less staff they have to pay out, the less money they're spending. And so that means more profits. So with those high beds, low staff, just kind of
that I can't talk right now.
Yeah.
It's just, it's like any situation, classroom size, but in a different scenario of you have more pupils and fewer teachers, but just translated for a prison context.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And like, and I mean, in some of the testimony we heard specifically, I mean, we've heard from former employees who worked there who were new people that were injured or even died as a result of that, or who themselves suffered those things.
Yeah. And I think to Justin and Ashley's points, right? So the sort of practices that get you in the black, right, to increase that profit margin are inherently contradictory to the ability to maintain safety and for both staff and residents. And I think that we saw that in 2021, right? All of those shortcuts, every sort of cent that you save, you're directly decreasing your ability to create a humane environment.
It's literally a zero-sum game, yep. Which I think a lot of things we see as zero-sum in our
correlation
budgets are. Yeah, no, for sure, right? Yeah. And it's like, I mean, I don't want to say this just like broadly with corporate mentality, is like, it's not even about like profitability in as much of like, okay, like our costs are X, like our income is Y, but then you have to like increase, you have to give more to the shareholders the year after. So it's like, you can't just have a profitable year and then the next year have a similarly profitable year. And I'm sure applicable of, you have to continue to exasperate that.
And I'll just point out that something I found pretty repulsive was that the CoreCivic CEO rang the bell at the New York Stock Exchange last fall. And there's just something really dystopian about that to me, considering the sort of business that they're in. Yeah.
Let me add to that, because this is a subject that we have been approached with before, and it's drawn fire because we are not saying the capitalist system is bad. We've been hit with this before, what we're specifically saying, because it's like you said, one thing starts out as a simple idea that you have costs, you have to bring an income. It's very innocent in the beginning. We're saying that in this specific situation, it doesn't fit.
Mm-hmm.
And so the end does not justify the means. So that's what we're saying.
And it's short-sighted for the city, right? And that's why I think the city is taking the care and the permit, is like the shortcuts that CoreCivic takes are very short-sighted and for their own balance sheet. They're not considering sort of the cost to the city in terms of both staffing and resources that the city has, but also sort of the damage that you're doing to the people.
Yeah, people over profits.
Yeah, I think we see a lot on these signs. The opposite, profit over people, like, is what they're doing. And we're not just seeing it at this facility, because if it was just the Leavenworth facility, it would be one thing. But we have ongoing issues in Tennessee, California, all across the nation. So it's not just, oh, this was a mess up in Leavenworth. This is just general practice.
It's baked into their how they operate.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure. So the second position for CAC, the presence of the CoreCivic facility will place significant strain on local police, hospitals, and community resources, exacerbating existing understaffing and infrastructure challenges in Leavenworth, which, as we tee this up for, you guys are giving me all the transitions right now, and I'm loving it. So actually, I'm going to throw it to you to kind of share more about that position and why that's part of the prominent message from the CAC.
Yeah, absolutely. So like I kind of said earlier, the CAC wants to look at things from all angles, and one of the big things when the facility was previously open was police were constantly being called out to the facility. We already have one hospital system that is not very robust. So we don't have a hospital system in Leavenworth to support the ongoing medical issues that are being experienced at the CoreCivic facility. We also haven't got our streets repaved very often, which is going to be even more of a problem when you have thousands of vehicles running around your city constantly, and that's going to put even more strain on your tax dollars. So when we said we came at this from an inclusive perspective, I mean, there's people who don't necessarily care that we're having another prison, but they care about how their tax dollars are being spent and where their tax dollars are going. So when we already have a police system that is short-staffed, and more of the city's tax dollars, my tax dollars are going to be going towards that police officer going out to the facility instead of maybe being across town where there's an emergency happening. That's a concern that we need to raise and point out, and also with our EMS services. So that would require the city to increase those services and spend more money on tax, EMS, whatever, infrastructure to address CoreCivic reopening.
And those tax dollars are then, I mean, that's then money that CoreCivic doesn't need to spend. That's just pure profitability for them. They've basically offloaded those costs that they would otherwise be paying. Does anyone have anything else that they want to add on that point?
Yeah, I mean, just from reading the police chief's statement, I think he signed an affidavit that he submitted to the planning commission as they're considering sort of the draft special use permit. And he sort of talked about, you know, the challenges that his police officers faced. And so the problem of, you know, Korsavik staff not letting police in to interview witnesses to a crime, to interview victims of a crime. There were issues with, you know, they didn't preserve crime scenes. And so police wouldn't have access to those crime scenes until days later. And detainees and staff have already walked all over a crime scene. And so there's really, there's like some very, I'm not a forensics expert, but there's some fundamental evidentiary challenges there.
Pretty intuitive.
Yeah. And so the police chief named a lot of concerns that he had. And I think sort of named, you know, the strain that it created on his officers. And then I will also say there was an affidavit submitted by, before this, I had never really thought of like the facility and sort of the daily, I don't want to say boring, but sort of ordinary things to think about, like water and electricity and wastewater and you know, but those are all like really important considerations for people who live there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's been really eye-opening to me to sort of understand that there were serious concerns with the wastewater, right? There were health concerns because things got backed up. There's the issue with the grinder, right? They need to put in a grinder for sort of the scale of a facility like that. And then, you know, they get blankets and shirts and stuff will get sort of flushed. And so that creates a backup in the Korsavik system, in the facility system. But then that creates downstream problems, right? That affects, you know, Leavenworth doesn't have a huge, so that creates huge problems just like from a health perspective, but also, you know, the problem of being able to use your water as a Leavenworth resident. It's encouraged me to sort of grow in how I think about a facility in a place like Leavenworth. And sort of when we talk about impact on community, like it's everything, right?
I think kind of between what Ashley was sharing and that, like, it seems to me that Korsavik especially is kind of playing this dance between private entity and then like part of the community, where anytime it's like profitability comes in, it's like, well, yeah, we're private, we're getting that. And it's like anytime costs come up, it's like, well, we're in the community. So it's like,
which I think to go back, right, is goes back to the Carceral Accountability Council and like how expansive that definition of accountability.
Yeah, account. Yeah. Yeah, it's a really good point.
And I think that's why it's so important that they go through the special use permit process and we are able to like go through it with a fine tooth comb and like making sure some of those things that happened previously, like those infrastructure issues or those service issues, don't happen again. And the city of Leavenworth isn't bearing the cost of a Korsavik facility functioning in their society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, I think that's part of too, like, one of the ideas I have gathered from having a lot of lawyers in my life all of a sudden is that like the idea like a contract is like kind of like kindness in a way, because it explicitly sets out expectations. It prevents the issues because it spells it all out ahead of time. So like the special use permit is the exact kind of like, these are the expectations, these are the needs that we have as a community. So this is how we can make sure that those are represented. Like there's like a real practicality and a productivity to that.
Yeah.
I would probably add to talk to people that do not care about the detention system as it is. I would say this to them because right now the biggest situation in our area that's happening is the Chiefs Stadium, the Star Bonds and everything else. Right now, you know, we're dealing with the Star Bonds, but as a facility, as a stadium, we're already having those conversations of, okay, what would that look like in Wyandotte County? The strain on the electricity we're already dealing with, higher costs to power generation on our side of the Kansas area. Everybody from Leavenworth is not a big town, as me mentioned, the small footprint. For us, installing a simple thing like a grinder pump, laying more pipe is a massive undertaking. It takes city, county, and state partnerships because we are a small town. So even if people don't care necessarily about the detention aspect, everybody can understand that if we are okay with things like new stadiums being built, if we're okay with new data centers being built and down the list, this is the procedure that we would go, that everybody would go through. And so everybody is fine normally taking into account all this stuff when you talk about a new Amazon center. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden we're talking about a detention center and there are those who say, hey, just open the thing. Let's not talk about all this other stuff. No, this is the normal procedure that we would go through anytime. So there's an argument that can be made for those who see this as a moral, ethical issue. There's also an argument that can be made for people who think of this as a procedural issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same either way you see it.
Yeah, that's a really healthy context.
I really appreciated that. This is a normal thing that we do for other facilities. It's not crazy that we're doing it for this facility as well. I want to jump ahead to the third position that you guys have on the website. Leavenworth's community has demonstrated strong opposition to reopening the ICE detention facility with nearly 2,000 signatures on a petition and a unanimous 2023 vote by county officials to halt discussions on its conversion. The city has a vital opportunity to move beyond the label of a prison town and instead envision a future rooted in growth, diversity, and positive community development rather than expanding its role as a detention hub. And Justin, I'll throw it to you, which again, you have teed us up so perfectly because you mentioned when you had moved to Leavenworth and kind of having that outsider's perspective. And you've kind of talked a little bit earlier to looking at a future beyond just being a prison town. So I'm kind of curious to see you get the full wheel now. I want to hear more about it.
Well, the first thing I would say is everybody in Leavenworth knows about the business park that we have on the south side of town and how it has struggled to develop. We came into that the same as every other city that is medium-sized around the metro. Open up a business park, most likely put data centers into it, and everything else. That's what we tried to do. And now we are diverted from that, and we're putting our full focus on the core civic situation. We're going to have prisons in Leavenworth. We're going to have a prison in Lansing. They have been there for some more than 100 years. Everything has a trickle effect. You keep down this road of prisons, that affects everything from the taxes, the property taxes, what we can invest in, and everything else. Right now in the news, we are dealing with a school situation where we are shutting down a school in Leavenworth that nobody wants shut down, opening up a detention center, which nobody wants. Mm-hmm. And so if you just look at the context, we are messing up our future,
yeah.
The future of our kids, their future education, the future of this country, because you can't have a firm foundation for a country at the education base. We're messing all that up because we are so focused on this fight with a facility that I think people get this idea that, you know, well, Leavenworth, some people want it, some people don't. If you really think about it, nobody wants that. Nobody's sitting there clamoring, thinking when they wake up, like, hey, today I would love to have a discussion about how we can get more people incarcerated under one administration's ideology. So nobody's doing that. And so when we're talking about a path forward, a future forward, it doesn't encompass things like this. It shouldn't encompass things like this. There's no growth that comes from this. There's no good, warm, and fuzzy feeling that you come from this. There's no good, warm, and fuzzy feeling that you come from probably even working there. I have yet to meet a guard that says, I would love for Core Civic to open up because I can't wait to fulfill their mission. There's a lot of other opportunities we should pursue in Leavenworth. Leavenworth is positioned to do a lot of great things. And the sooner that we can get out of this mentality that this is all that we're focused on, the sooner that we could have actually worked on that other stuff. But right now we're tied up with this. The Leavenworth government is tied up with this. And until this gets resolved in one form or fashion, that's what we're doing. And we're just messing up everything else. So that's my strong stance on it. I'm a microcosm of what other people in Leavenworth are feeling. Mm-hmm. So that's what you just heard.
I would say, like, just to add to that, that people aren't necessarily saying, oh, we want this detention facility, but they are saying, we want the jobs, we need the money. But the reality is we don't need another detention center. We already have understaffed facilities in Leavenworth. So there's job openings. There's just nobody applying for them, nobody to fill these jobs. So people are having to come in from Missouri or out of state to come fill these new facilities. But we need to diversify jobs. In Leavenworth and the Leavenworth community itself, it doesn't need more prisons, doesn't need more detention centers. It needs to fill the business park. It needs for the Starbond development, the Leavenworth Plaza, to fill it with restaurants and shops. And I think there was a proposed sand volleyball court that was going to go in there, which I'm particularly excited about. So I don't have to drive all the way out here to Walmart or a city you can play. But I think that's the key focus that is driving a lot of people to support this facility is that Leavenworth, maybe not necessarily based on like our unemployment rate, needs jobs. Because, I mean, we're sitting at a healthy unemployment rate, about 4%, I believe. But the community itself needs money. So people are looking for jobs that are offering higher pay and they're looking for movement in their positions. So that's the hunger that Leavenworth has, and that's why we're seeing some support for this facility.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And then the last position that is listed on the website that I wanted to make sure that we talked about We categorically reject a detention system that enriches private interests, evades public accountability, and inflicts suffering on vulnerable individuals. Private facilities are shielded from transparency and legal scrutiny, driven by profit motives that perpetuate unnecessary detention. Ashley, can you share more about that?
Yeah, so I think this kind of really embodies the Carceral Accountability Council as a whole, because we're not saying like there shouldn't be a prison system, there shouldn't be detention systems. We're saying that a lot of these private facilities evade all accountability that you would hopefully see at the federal and state level. So that's kind of what we're trying to bring to Leavenworth right now. So like if this facility were to open, or even right now as they go through the process of trying to open, we really want to hold them accountable to applying to that special use permit and find ways to hold them accountable in their practices if they were open. So like Justin said earlier, it's not that we're saying like we hate capitalism, we hate people getting profit or anything. That's definitely not the case, because I mean, that's what a business is for. Mm-hmm. However, this business preys off of humanity. This business preys off of depriving people of their own human rights and civil rights. From past to current practices, we want to hold them accountable to treating all humans like humans, whether they are workers and guards or the detainees themselves. Everyone has inherent human rights and civil rights. So we want to make sure that those are protected through this process of them applying to open and if they were to open. So that's where we're coming from with that.
Yeah. And I think that speaks to like, just like in the broadest sense, societally, the profitability and the human rights. It's weird to say that those are in opposition to each other, but they are in this instance. And I think recognizing that there's a pull there that.
Yeah, there absolutely is that pull there. We've seen it, like I've said, historically with the triple bunking, like shoving people into their facilities to get more money and understaffing. So it's just in their practices to do so.
Mm-hmm. So Justin, I was, you know, kind of starting and familiarizing myself with CAC, I assume that the mission would be particularly tied to Leavenworth, and that's clearly the origin story, as we've heard. But on the website, it seems pretty clear to me that the CAC is based in Leavenworth, but the mission and like the positions we're looking at look to a bigger picture than just the one community. So I thought maybe I'd ask you to share about that and talk about how you see CAC's mission beyond Leavenworth now, and maybe if there's aspirations as part of that too, in terms of roadmap for growth.
Yeah, it's an ongoing conversation. We pretty much want to be agile on this. Obviously, this was our core, and this is now our campaign, the core civic situation. But we have learned through this entire process, I think, learned how to walk and chew gum. It's funny you said an origin story, because that's what core civic is going to be for us. It is going to be our origin story, because we're going to build off of that. You're going to see stories that come out of it. We already are starting with those same stories, where we have engaged in conversations with people who have had issues in our local facilities. Going back to the origin story, you're going to probably see eventually how these things all correlate. You know, in the end, it's easy to look back at how it did for us. That's how it's going to probably work. We're all board members, and we all come at this from a different perspective. We all have different backgrounds. Ashley mentioned she's from Texas. She's Latina. She has a whole different background than I have. That's going to drive her perspective. I have a different background where I don't have much personal experience with the carceral system, but my family sadly does. And so I have that experience, and that's going to bring in kind of ideology that I have. We're going to attack this from different angles. We can't tell you how the future is going to look.
Yeah, do you have anything you want to add to that, Ashley, of looking beyond Leavenworth and maybe even looking towards the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we have a possibility to expand and do good across Kansas. We have contacts with people across the nation looking to kind of replicate like how we've done movement building, how we've done education, and different avenues that we've taken to kind of start holding Core Civic accountable for what they're doing. So people are looking at the municipalities and trying to put that SUP ordinance in and making sure that there's safeguards so that a company can't just come in and do whatever they want with their community. So I do see us expanding, not just through like the work that we're doing in Kansas, but also our communications nationally.
So Ashley, my next question is for you then. Here at the ACLU of Kansas, we kind of use the terminology sometimes, reimagining justice. That was one of our campaigns. which is phrasing I kind of find powerful, as it kind of points to like this bigger framework. It kind of takes you out of any myopia and points beyond. I would say that that helps give a fresh and thoughtful look at the purported purposes of our criminal legal system and an honest assessment of how we're achieving that. So I thought a similar thought process is being used by the verbiage by the CAC. And so I kind of wanted to open up a conversation about ways that you kind of are thinking about reimagining justice and what a justice system looks like when it's purposely built to serve our communities.
Yeah, so I think that there's a lot of angles to approach this. But I think first and foremost is trying to address one of the concerns that Esme brought up earlier, is that the tolerance in the U.S. for violence is, we've seen it higher within our prison systems than some other countries do. So I think reimagining our justice system starts with that. We treat people that are incarcerated, that are being detained, as humans, and not that people that deserve less or don't deserve proper medical treatment or deserve beet slop or whatever. Because these are a lot of the comments I'm also seeing on the posts that we make sometimes about the work that we're doing is, oh, these people don't deserve rights. So they deserve to be treated poorly, or they don't deserve a comfy bed or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's changing. It starts with changing public opinion on the purpose of the prison system. And some people, it's meant to punish them and serve their time. That doesn't mean you have to treat them like worse than animals. And with the detention center, a lot of these people haven't committed any crimes. The only crime is trying to come here, pursue a better life, or they cross the border without going through the proper channels. So it's not something that is like an egregious thing that they've done that they deserve to be punished and put in horrible, unlivable conditions. So kind of starting to change people's perspectives around that, on what the purpose of a detention center is or purpose of the prison system is.
Yeah. Is this to make life as horrible as possible for people, or is there like a bigger, like it's such a small thing, but that really clicked with me. I heard someone saying, like, with public policy, like, always ask, like, and then what? And it's like, okay, we like take these people in for a number of years and treat them just like, I mean, like subhuman, honestly. I think there's no other kind of way to say it.
Yeah. So there's that. And then also building this as like a community partnership. So a lot of times it's just like, oh, there's this prison here and it's going to destroy property values and like nobody wants to live near it. Nobody wants to kind of work near it. We just don't look at it. But I think making it work within our community, whether it's like we talked about with infrastructure and taxes, making sure they're working properly with our polices and medical system and our commissioners or whoever your city officials are, making sure wages are competitive to ensure that people in there are being taken care of and that money goes back to the community in some way, and building those community partnerships. So there's a lot of different angles that we can approach reimagining justice in the future, but having the carceral system be reimagined from the beginning as not something that needs to be inhumane and also something that partners with the community rather than destroys and kind of eats at it. I think two perspectives that we can start to grow off of, but I'd like to hear what y'all think as well on reimagining it.
Yeah, I mean, I am an abolitionist at heart, right? And so I think until then, when we've had other solutions for crimes and when we're not punishing the civil violation with imprisonment, when I think of reimagining justice, I think about alternative solutions to policing and to incarceration just broadly, right? I think our default reaction as a society is to imprison people for any number of things. And if you look at certain levels of, I mean, you can even go to jail for speeding too much, right? And so the default that we have for a whole scale of different criminalized behaviors is to detain people. Mm-hmm. And then when you think about the role that wealth and race play, and then when you think about the history of detention and policing and incarceration and how that's been weaponized against entire portions of our population going back centuries, I just think the whole system is rotten, right? To me, when I think of reimagining, I think of starting anew and reimagining in sort of broad humanity. We have these different impulses and like how we react to different things. And to me, the policies that we have and the systems and infrastructure we build, like, we can sort of throw around these big words, but it is like, it comes down to, do you build a prison in your town? That is an impulse that you are sort of indulging, right? And I just don't want to see a world where we are building communities and towns and creating buildings based on the worst impulses that we see in Facebook comments. Like that cannot be what drives what our communities look like. And so I think reimagining justice is also about sort of asking, what is our higher self? How does our higher self respond to when someone in our community does someone wrong? And I don't think it's what we find in the Facebook comments.
I would agree on that.
A couple of things I kind of heard, if I can pick out from you a little bit, I think we just don't like to look at our problems as a society. And so if you just throw people in prison, if you identify them as a problem and you get rid of them that way, it's like when I would clean my room as a kid, just throw everything in the closet and it's like, look, it's clean. It's like, well,
I think this gets into a lot of the talks around what it means to criminalize things and, you know, criminalization as a whole. And I think the squeamishness that we have when it comes to violent crime, predatory crime, being reluctant to recognize that we're all capable of violence and committing crimes.
Yeah.
And I think warehousing people and putting them away is sort of this idea that you can now separate those people from the rest of us. And then that way, the rest of us are safe from those impulses that exist. But I think they very much are in all of us.
Yeah. It doesn't really look to fix anything. The and then what is just like, and then we have a problem and we throw that in prison. It's like, okay, and then someone else does it. We throw them in prison. It's like, there's no restoration. There's no fix. Justin, I want to make sure I throw it to you. What do you think about with reimagining justice or this conversation in general?
I'm probably a mix between Ashley and Esme. You have people who everybody sees something. They see the same thing, but nobody reacts to it because they think that somebody else will react to it. I think that that's where we are as a society. It goes to the thing of, well, there's this knee-jerk reaction because we have done it historically. We have built prisons. Those prisons are places that we just push the people that we don't like. They did something or it was supposed to be egregious in the beginning. We push them in there. And now we have this thing where, yeah, you get a couple speeding tickets. You don't even realize you have a warrant out for your arrest. Next thing you know, boom, you roll through that stop sign. You get picked up. There's a warrant. You're in jail. And that happens over and over and over again. And all of a sudden, a crime is a crime, but the punishment, this sounds cliche, should fit the crime.
Right.
And next thing you know, you have a system that's built with so many people and we're filling up a lot of our prisons. And because of that, we fill them up. We have to build more and momentum keeps going. And next thing you know, you have a ton of prisons. And then all of a sudden you have open facilities that need to be filled. And then you have private entities that say, hey, I'll fill them. Mm-hmm. Like everything begins at something and then there's an inflection point. And I think that we're at that point where we're at that ledge where we don't have to keep going the direction that we're going. We could stop, reevaluate. And if there is any more of a time to take a moral step back, it would be right now to say, what the heck are we doing? That doesn't mean that you triple bunk, doesn't mean that you give them the worst kind of food or bad food that is past its expiration date, doesn't mean that you deny them medical care, doesn't mean that you deny them their basic rights of religion, education, and stop their life. That's how you just destroy a generation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that even people who disagree with our stance overall, if they just stopped and as a human aspect and asked, okay, would I like this done to me? That's cliche. Everybody says that. But really, like, how do you then do the opposite and say, I completely am for that. We don't have to continue this. There's a different way in doing this because the problem continues. It's not like we're fixing. It's not like we're solving the problem. We are just continuing the cycles.
Yeah. Yeah. I really appreciate that. We almost see prisons as like outside the community, if you will. But I think the average time spent in prison is it 3 years or something like that?
Short, yeah.
Yeah, it's really short. And so we're not talking about individuals that are quote unquote prisoners, like their identity has not changed in that way. I don't believe that it has. We're talking about people who will be part of our communities in a short time. Are we building our systems with that in mind?
And I think too, understanding that those walls are sort of temporary and imaginary. And so like we build prisons sort of assuming that these walls are permanent and the separation is permanent, but that's just not the case, right?
Right.
And like even when someone is incarcerated, a lot of times you have a family that's affected that has to navigate going in and out of the prison and what it means to be separated from a provider or a child. Reimagining justice too, I think is also asking like, what do we actually need? And at some point, it's like, when do we ask, do we have enough prisons?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I need more. And then at what point do we ask, you know, what actually repairs, right? And so when there's a rupture in a relationship, whether that's between people or in a group, you know, what actually repairs that relationship, especially when it's a community member that isn't going anywhere, right? In a lot of families and groups, the healthiest solution is usually not permanent separation. A healthiest solution for everyone to sort of move forward as a whole is something that is more reparative than retributive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And I think every time I like listen to something like on a podcast, it's like for the next 3 days, that's all I like think or talk about. But like it was a story of a single mother who worked at like a gas station, lived across the parking lot. Her babysitter fell through. And now she's like, OK, I could call out of work and get fired and then get evicted. I could take the baby in, but then I might get like and ultimately decided to bring a baby monitor with her and to work. And then like every whatever 45 minutes or it sounded like more frequent breaks than I would normally think of. But like go check on the baby. And someone noticed or found out or whatever. And I mean, she had the child taken from her. She was thrown in prison for child abandonment. And it's like this thing of like, we also flatten these stories into like, she was arrested for child abandonment. And you hear just that and you're like, what a horrible mother. We have to prevent that. We have to whatever. But then when you humanize, and I think there's so many stories, I think you can go through the scale though and seeing the larger narrative. I don't know that I would do anything different.
That's a great point too. And sort of goes back to the problem of immigration detention. And I think the shift that we're seeing, right, is a lot of people hearing stories that are sort of the immigration version of the one you're telling.
And, yeah.
And I think nearly every human I meet is redeemable in some way. And I think nearly every story you hear, you can find elements where you're like, oh, they're for the grace of God, go I, right? Like that, I probably wouldn't have made a different choice in that situation. And I think similarly with undocumented families or documented families.
Well, it goes to framing because that's what we're basically battling because we're here on the ground and literally what we're saying does not line up with the little, 30-second clip that you hear on the news. We try to say this over and over again. We present the facts as they are. For us, CoreCivic wrote this story themselves. They dug their own grave because of the consistent stuff that they have done.
Yeah.
That's the thing I enjoy most about, especially like our executive board meetings, is we come at it from all different angles and all different value points and all different demographics. We're not yes men to each other. We're not, yeah, that sounds great. Like we'll sit there. I think our last meeting was almost 3 hours just going back and forth, talking about different perspectives. And we didn't all agree on everything. And I think that was the healthiest thing for us because we were able to broaden our view and have those conversations on different approaches. So that's who the CAC is. Like, we're inclusive and we want to think through things and we want to continue to learn and we want to continue to approach things from a middle ground perspective that we can actually make effective change together.
Thank you so much to Ashley and to Justin for joining us for this enlightening conversation. And thank you as well to our own Jesse and Esme for their stellar work at the ACLU of Kansas and the Communications Department. If you, too, would like to make your voice heard and speak out against reopening the dangerous facility in Leavenworth, please consider joining thousands of others in signing the petition against it at aclukansas.org/takeaction. Taking a quick moment to sign can make an outsized impact as decision makers in Leavenworth hear our united voice. If you left that conversation with Ashley and Justin wondering what one little thing you could do today to stop a particularly pernicious for-profit prison from opening in Leavenworth, the unambiguous answer to that question is to sign the petition at aclukansas.org/takeaction. Well, that does it for this month's episode of Marching On. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next month with more conversations with the people at the heart of the civil liberties movement in Kansas. Until next time, keep marching on.